Welcome to 2015, the spring semester, and CS 438, CS 505 operating systems. What I'd like to do now is go over the syllabus. You should have copies of the syllabus. Anybody not have a copy? They're right here. It's also up here on the screen. After I go through the syllabus, I'll go through some other things. We'll take a look at the schedule. I haven't given you copies of the schedule, but we'll just take a quick look at that to give you some idea of what's going on. And then we'll talk about odds and ends with respect to the course, like what textbook should you have, and other things that you might be interested in. So this is your basic course in operating systems. You get to learn about operating systems, which turns out is a lot of fun, although it's mostly painful fun. The course is divided into 7 2-week sections, almost. There's actually one section that has spring break, so that's actually 3 weeks. And this, of course, is the first section, the introductory section. And like I said, at the end of this lecture, we'll take a look at the schedule just briefly. You should be a proficient programmer, and you should know your data structures and algorithms. The prerequisites for this class, for 438, which is the undergraduate level, it's architecture, which is principally what we're going to be talking about in this section. We'll be going over the important parts of the architecture that you learned in 286, and we'll also be going over the architecture of the system that you'll be programming in. And, of course, data structures and algorithms. For 505, same thing, different names. 503 and 509. Class meets in this disgusting cattle pen on Wednesdays and Mondays. Goes from 7:25 to 9:15. I started about 5 minutes late today to give people who are just wandering around in a daze time to get here. But from now on, we'll start at 7:25. There's a whole mess of interesting points. Well, not a whole mess. Some. Let's see. That's close enough. So this is the first day of class. This is when the midterm grades are due for the undergraduates. Graduate students don't need to worry about their midterms. This is the spring break week that I was talking about. This is the 3-week section, which I believe goes from here to here. This is drop day, and then the last day of class. What will we learn in this class? Lots of stuff. But principally, we'll be learning about operating systems, and in particular, we want to understand essentially three things. What are the principal parts of an operating system? And how do they work? What do they do? And in particular, how can you do them, given that you have this particular function assigned to this particular section of the operating system? The second objective in this class is essentially impossible, and that's to understand what's going on inside an operating system. What does it mean when people blame the scheduler for the fact that your videos are jerky? Does that even make sense, or are they pulling one on you? Right. That's one of the things we'd like to figure out. The reason that this is essentially impossible is that things have become so complicated that nobody really understands what's going on anywhere. But we'll pretend that we can. And then finally, to be able to judge the suitability and quality of existing operating systems or potential operating systems. As we'll talk about a little bit after the end of this lecture, there is actually a good reason to study operating systems because it's a pretty intense period now of operating system development, particularly with respect to things like virtual machines. There's a whole mess of stuff. I used to understand operating systems to the extent that you can do that. I don't anymore. And who am I? I'm your instructor this semester. My name is Richard Clayton. You can call me Rich. I don't need to hear professor or doctor or mister or sir. On the other hand, if you prefer using titles, if you're more comfortable using titles, go right ahead. My office is the adjunct's office at CS, right next to Trisha's office. And office hours are from approximately 6 to 7 on Mondays and Wednesdays. I am usually not here any other time. I'll be here around 5 o'clock on Mondays and Wednesdays. We could also meet, if you want, after class, but I would really prefer not to do that, as I suspect most of you would either. So if you can, try and meet before, or if you can't make any of those times, then you can set up an appointment and we can meet in whenever you'd like. Well, let me not say that. But we can negotiate that. Okay, the important part, grading. There are essentially two sources of grades in this class. One is a positive source in that you get points. The other one is a negative source in which points get taken away. Those two sources are the only sources of grades in this class. There is nothing else. There will be no other assignments or homework problems. There will be no tests. You won't be writing any reports. You won't be giving any presentations. So I make it simple for you. The positive source of your grades are the programming assignments. There are 6 programming assignments in this class, 1 for each section, starting with the second section. Okay? And in those programming assignments, you will implement an operating system. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we take a look at the schedule in the second half, and then I'll have a much more, well, as I mentioned, next week we'll look at some aspects of the architecture that you'll be working on, and then when your first assignment hits, we'll have a lot more to say about that. Well, that's actually out of order. Well, pop quizzes. Occasionally, I will give a pop quiz. If I see something interesting and particularly stupid, I will turn it into a pop quiz and give it in the first 5 minutes of class. I haven't seen anything really stupid. Of course, I haven't been looking too hard either. I didn't give a pop quiz last semester, and I don't think I gave one the semester before. But it's possible. I'm not going to say too much about that unless one actually comes up, and then we can deal with that when it does. The second source of grades is, as I said, a negative source. You don't get points. You get them taken away. And those are mud cards. Anybody know what a mud card is? Ever heard of it? I usually do this every semester. Mud cards were developed, I don't know, some smart place like Harvard or MIT or something like that. And essentially what I do anyway is when I give a lecture, at the end of the lecture, everybody writes a question about something they didn't understand about the lecture. And that's why it's called the mud card. Originally, it was like, if there's anything muddy or unclear about this lecture, write down a question and hand it in. All right? So that's what you're going to do, except you're not going to do it with respect to the lecture. You're going to do it with respect to your readings, readings that you'll get throughout the semester. So at the start of every class, beginning with the second section, because when we talk about the textbook issue, I don't know how many people have textbooks? Right, not a lot. So the assumption is by the start of the second section, you will have your textbook. At that point, you will start handing in mud cards. All right, so you walk in the door and you give me your mud card. All right, and you'll do that every time you walk in the door for a regularly scheduled class. If you don't do that, if you don't give me a mud card, you lose a quarter point off the associated programming assignment. Okay, so in particular, if you think about it, we have 2 week sections, we have two lectures per week. That's essentially four lectures per section. At a quarter point, that's 1 point that gets knocked off your whatever your grade is for your programming assignment. And that's it. That's your only sources of grades in this class. In particular, there are no tests. I'll be doing a lot of things I haven't really done before, and this is one of them. I've always given tests in the past, but I don't really like tests, so I'm not going to give them anymore. But, of course, this is apart from the pop quizzes. And that's it. Any questions about grading? Yes. No midterm. Did I? Where? No. Your midterm grades are due on the, whatever it was, 10th, was it March, something like that? The one that I always forget, I think the past three semesters I have forgotten to turn in the midterm grades. Yes?
Does that mean there's no final?
That means there is no final. Now, according to well, I say university regulations. I don't know whose regulations they are. I have to do something that period. So I usually have the lecture on something I think is interesting. But, of course, nobody shows up, so I never give the lecture. But that's a separate issue, and it's my problem. Any other? Yes?
What is this thing at the bottom, the unweighted average of five highest assignments?
We'll get to that.
Oh. Do you answer the mud cards?
Yes.
Do you have multiple questions?
I suppose you could. Oh, that's the other thing. So you can start submitting mud cards now if you want, and then you can take, well, I mean, it doesn't really do. I was just going to say, but you don't get any points, so what would the deal be? All right, skip that. We'll try and make it as easy as possible. Yes, I will answer them. Yes.
So it's just six assignments in this class?
Sorry?
There's just 6 parts of our grades in this class, the 6 programming assignments?
Yes, there's just 6 programming assignments. That's it. Right. Anything else? Did I mention the monologue dialogue? Did I say that already? Okay. I prefer to give dialogues as opposed to monologues, so questions are fine. All right, how's the grading going? So I was actually kind of upset. I have turned into one of those professors that has a weird grading scale. None of this 0 to 100 stuff. So, and of course, that just seems to me stupid because, like, almost the entire scale is failure. There's just this little percentage up top where you pass. That didn't strike me as being very sensible. So I rescale things. And the grades go from 0 to 45. It's inclusive on both ends. Although it doesn't say that here, does it? And it's a pretty straightforward grade range. The undergraduates will notice that we're missing a D here. You can't get a D in this class. You can either pass or you get an F. That's why fool around, right? You can either pass this class or you're out of it. If anybody, I mean, you deserve a D. You paid for it. So if anybody has problems with that, let me know. But as it stands, of course, graduate students are like, yeah, right, Ds. They don't exist anyway. All right, so that's the grading scale, pretty straightforward. And I used to go into, it's so nice to not have tests. I used to go in this like 15-minute lecture about what my rubric was. What does an A mean? What does a B mean? Who cares, right? If your program passes with all the tests, you get an A. If it passes some of the tests, you get a B. And then we'll talk about the rest later. That's it. Pretty straightforward. There is actually this issue of plus and minuses, and those are style points, but we'll talk about those later. All right, so your final grade is the straight, unweighted average of the 5 highest assignment grades. Okay, so you got 1 to burn. Okay? But that's not a really big deal. Why not? Think about it for a second. Why isn't that a real big deal?
Because
Well, I guess it is, because that means you don't have to do the last programming assignment. But
you're happy with your grade.
Yeah, but I mean, this doesn't sound a big a deal as you would expect, because this is a continuous assignment. You cannot blow off the first assignment, because then you can't do any of the following assignments. Right? So the only assignment you can blow off is the last one, should you choose to do so. So it's not really that, because you can be strategic about this, right? You could sit there and think, all right, I got one to play, which one should I play? And the answer is you can only play the last one, because if you blow one off, then you've automatically blown everything else off too. I'll just point that out in case somebody's saying, great, I don't have to do the first programming assignment. Right. All grades are kept with one digit of precision to the right of the decimal point and 0.5 rounded up. There's no curve in this class. All right, which essentially means it's you against me. Actually, you against my programs that do testing. So essentially what that means is 35 is always going to be B+, never an A-. So this grade scale that you saw up here is always going to hold. The other nice thing about that is that you always know what your grade is. You just do the arithmetic. For the undergraduates, your, actually we can take a look at this later, but your midterm grade will be essentially the straight unweighted average of whatever programming assignments you have up to that point, which I believe will be two of them. That will be your midterm grade. Questions? Now we come to media. This is the textbook for the class. Silberschatz, Glavin, and Gagné. You can get pretty much, I mean, this is the 7th edition. There's an 8th edition that's out, and these people have at least 3 different versions of this textbook, and it doesn't really make any difference what version you get. All right, so you can get a 7th edition or maybe a 6th edition, whatever's cheapest. But you should be a little careful. There is, they have like an express version of this book where they throw parts of chapters out, and that's, you have to be careful there, because what they do is they throw out a lot about deadlock, excuse me, which you don't want to do because we spend a lot of time on deadlock. So you can get this as the, this is the official textbook. This is the textbook that I will be using to do the lectures. But, you know, all operating systems textbooks are more or less the same. They just stink in different ways. So if you don't, in fact, I had a student last semester who didn't like this book, so he used Tannenbaum and Woodhull, which is an excellent choice. There are some other textbooks that you can have or you can get, and I'll talk about those in the second half of the lecture. There's also an annotated bibliography which contains some other textbooks that you might want to look at. That's not going to work at all. How amusing. I actually don't believe that either. Huh. All right, well, you can click on that when it eventually works. The other point is that this is going to be, as you, I suspect, have figured out, a programming course. And unfortunately, you're going to be programming in Java, or perhaps some JVM-based language. We'll have to see about that. So you should know how to program in Java, and we're going to be writing really significant programs. These are not trivial programs. So you really got to have your chops, okay? So you should have whatever tools you assemble to do your work. My recommendation is to get Core Java 2 by Horstman. This is a good book to fill in the details. You probably don't need a lot of this stuff. You probably want to know the class library, particularly the foundation classes, perhaps generics. I don't know. That might be helpful. But this is a good expansive book to answer those questions that you may have about Java. The other book I recommend, these are the books that I keep around when I program in Java, is Java in a Nutshell, which essentially is like, you know, what's the option for getting lint checks on your compilations, that sort of thing. So this is a very concise and complete book on the niggling little details that you always forget. What's the syntax of the for each statement? Is there a colon in there someplace? So that's a reasonably good book. There's another book called Java Precisely, which essentially does the same thing. Any one of those is fine. Or, I mean, if you have a really whizzy IDE, of course, you can just get all this stuff with a snap of your fingers. Yes?
Can we use whatever IDE we
want? I don't care. You're going to be submitting jar files, so you do whatever you want. But, again, like I said, you're going to be writing programs. That's all you're going to be doing in this class. So you want to be comfortable in what you do. Any other questions? Email is really important. That's practically the only way to get in touch with me. I don't answer the telephone. And like I said, I'm not going to be on campus for most of the day. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is to send me email. In addition, because it turns out I really don't know how to program the Java App Engine, you're going to also be submitting your assignments via email. Maybe I'll get that fixed by the end of the semester and we can actually move to the cloud. That will be exciting. But until then, you'll also be submitting your assignments via email. So you should make sure that your email works. This is your Monmouth University email account. It's the only account that will work. In addition, we have a class mailing list. We, in fact, have two class mailing lists because this is actually two classes. This is 438 and 505. And I forgot to get both of those email addresses, so I can't tell you what they are. But as soon as I figure it out, I'll send email, and you'll find out what they are. But the point here is that with respect to the class mailing list, which goes to everybody in the class, I keep a hypermail archive. I have a little spider that sits on my mailbox and looks for mail that comes in via the class mailing list. And it takes it and turns it into a web page that it stores at this location. So you can go here, maybe, if we're lucky. Yes, okay. So, and in this case, nothing has happened yet, so it's empty. Notice this, where is it? Up here. Notice this, tinyurl.com, MUCSOSS15M. That will take you to this URL. Well, actually, you don't know what the URL is because you can't see it. Right, there are three of those aliases set up, and they all have the same pattern. So you can use this as a quicker way, a more memorable way to get to the hypermail archive, to get to, as we'll see in a minute, the homepage as well as the schedule. If you send me personally a question, and I think that that question is of general interest to the class. So, for example, you ask me a question about the assignments, which is pretty much the only thing you can ask me a question about, or maybe the lectures or whatever. What I will do is I will give you an answer. I will send you an answer. And then I will take your question and my answer, put them together, and then strip away all the identifying information on that question and submit it to the class mailing list so that it goes out to everybody. And then, of course, my spider will pick it up and put it on the hypermail archive. If you are sending me a personal message that is not of general interest to the class, this will not happen. So if you are telling me that you're going to be out for some reason, right, that even though other people may think so, that is not of general interest to the class, and that will not be broadcasted to the class mailing list. If you want to be sure, if you don't trust my judgment, then explicitly say, please don't forward this. Right? And I had a student who, whatever the question was, said, don't forward this, which is unfortunate because she actually asked pretty good questions. But if she says no, then I won't do it. Okay? Also, keep in mind, you can also use the class mailing list yourself, if you'd like, to talk to your fellow students. But remember, there are two classes of fellow students. There are the undergraduates and the graduates. So depending upon who you want to talk to, you want to make sure that you send it to the right address. And I believe that's all for email. Questions about that? Okay. This is the homepage that we're looking at. Pardon me, you all have paper copies of it. You can find it here at this URL, or you can find it here at tinyurl.com, MUCS, Computer Science, OS, Operating Systems, S15H for home. Pretty much everything else, this is a lie, pretty much everything else will be available on the schedule, okay, which is available at this URL or this URL with the S at the end for schedule. The homepage isn't very interesting. It doesn't change very often. The schedule, on the other hand, is where everything happens. So you probably want to bookmark this and visit it regularly. If you look at the operating systems class I taught last semester, you'll see that I screencast it. I'm not going to do that this semester because I'm not going to have slides this semester. So there's nothing to screencast, really. So in that case, I will be doing podcasts. Right? So I'll be recording the lectures and then making them available on the schedule. The way I like to work it is let's assume we have 2 hours, which is not quite correct. The first hour is essentially me standing up and going blah, 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 so the information goes that way. And then the second hour, the information flow reverses and you talk to me. That's essentially the way I'd like to work it. And I'm only going to record the first hour because recording people talking is a real pain in the neck and it doesn't really work that well. So since the first hour is essentially going to be me going like this, that's pretty reasonable. And so that'll be recorded, but the second half will not. And this is, I talked about last semester, so let me just give you that. Oh, you know, I bet you there's a tiny URL for this, too. But anybody want to speculate as to what it is? Well, I should be a little careful here. Anybody want to speculate as to what it is?
This is at the end.
Sorry?
Be at the end.
Yes, but remember, what is the S15?
Spring.
Right, and what semester was this?
Fall.
Right, so the URL is? F14, right. So it's M-U-C. Actually, let's see if that works. I don't know if it'll work. Let's try it. Let's go here. Maybe not. And let's do this. Maybe not. Oh, we're just being slow. Since I don't see it here, that makes me nervous. But let's see what happens. Nope. All right. All right, so here it is. I forget. I think we're not going to be talking about security this semester. I hope nobody's disappointed. I believe it is a channel. So if you go to the channel, or maybe it's a group. Oh, well, we'll find out. And I'm thinking there should be a lot more lectures here than that. Oh, I know. I have to click on this. Alright, so you can get you can look at the screencast from last semester. In fact, you could go to last semester's homepage, and if you really want to look at notes, you can do it there. So these are available. Some of these are really bad lectures. I'll let you figure out which ones. But it's there if you want to use it. They're also about an hour long. All right, where were we? Oh, and so apparently the web... Well, never mind. So that's podcasts. Microblogging, this course has a Twitter account. Please follow it. It's lonely. Yeah, probably. See, the problem is I've forgotten what the passwords are. And I have no idea how to recover them. Oh, what the hell? But there's all kinds of, like I said, things are really hopping in the operating systems world. So as soon as I can get the password figured out, I'll be posting a lot to this account. Principally, I use it for myself because I find a useful URL and I can throw it up here and I know where it is. Whereas if I use other things like Pinboard or I forget what the other one is I belong to, it's a pain in the neck and I forget it's there and I never look at it. So it's principally for me, but there are some amusing things. Unfortunately, the networking one has all the amusing, really amusing things. But oh well, maybe I can step up my game for operating systems. And that's it, I believe, for the specifics in this class. The rest of the stuff we're going to be talking about is like the boilerplate, the things that you get every semester in every class. So. Assistance, what you see is what you get. If you have need of anything else, you should come and see me. Okay? If you know what I'm talking about, you know what to do. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it doesn't involve you. Attendance. I have no class attendance policy, but of course that's a lie. You could attend class or not as you see fit. Okay? On the other hand, you're responsible for knowing everything that goes on in class. This is going to be particularly important for the second half of the semester. Because the thing about this class is, it kills students. Right? I kill 3/4 of a class when I teach operating systems, right? Which I don't mind. I mean, that's fine with me. But presumably it is unfortunate for the rest of you. So we're going to be spending a lot more time. This is one of the reasons why I set the class up like this. We're going to be spending a lot more time going over the project, the programming part. And that will be in the second half. And I'm going to hold you responsible for everything that goes on. But, I mean, really, who cares? Because there's no tests. So it's not like I say something really brilliant, and in my head I'm going, ooh, that's going to be on the test. Right? And you, if you're not here, you miss that. And then when it shows up on the test, you're like, what? That we don't have to worry about that because there are no tests. So I guess pretty much doesn't matter. Except, of course, for the assignment. And you can ignore this, too. Because, again, there's no tests. This was principally for people who like to blow off tests because that's really annoying. This is another reason I don't like tests because you have to deal with people who blow them off. So it's like, I'll blow them off. How about that? No tests. Fair. Now, because this is an undergraduate class, Monmouth University does have a class attendance policy, which I am going to ignore. I don't care. You're adults. You're almost adults. Well, you are adults. And you can figure it out for yourself. But I will, in fact, take attendance because I'd like to learn all your names. I've been slacking off on that. I didn't do it last semester. And I didn't do it the semester before, so, and that's because I'm getting old and I forget things. I mean, I forget things. So, I'm going to be doing attendance pretty regularly, and that's principally so I can learn your names. Usually what happens is once we hit drop day, I don't have to take attendance anymore, and hopefully I will know all your names by then so we can just stop taking attendance altogether. But that's what I will do. So I will take attendance, but it doesn't really count for anything. You don't get any credit for perfect attendance. You don't get any penalties for never showing up at all. That's not quite true. We'll take attendance in the second half of the lecture, but you need to be here at least once for the first 3 days because I have to verify the roster, and if you don't show up in the first 3 days, then you get dropped from the class. Now, of course, most of you don't have to worry about that, but if you have a friend who's not here, you might want to recommend that they show up at least once during the next 3 days so I can check them off and say, yeah, this person was here. And I believe that's it. Yes?
If you're out, your sticker sign, can you email the mud cart?
No, you cannot email. Oh, that's right. There's a bunch of rules. Thanks for reminding me. No, you cannot. Atoms, not bits. You have to hand in the email card. You have to hand it in. You can't give it to your friend to hand in. You personally have to hand it in. You have to do it within the first 15 minutes of class.
So you're sick, you're screwed.
That's right.
And postmark?
No. Because they're mud cards, come on.
Well, how many points for labs? How many points for labs? I mean, 25 points if you only have 45 points total.
Right.
That's significant.
No, not all. Awesome. Each grade. So the grades go from 0 to 5. What did you think?
Wait.
You need to get 45 points total?
So if you don't turn in one mud card, you go down to a 4.75 on that assignment? Or you go down to a 44.75?
If you got a 5 on your assignment,
yeah.
Okay, and you didn't turn in a mud card during that period, that section,
yeah.
You would lose 0.25 points off your assignment grade. So it would be 4.75.
That's big.
It's a quarter of a point.
Out of 5.
Sure. No.
That's big.
Right, out of 5, but that's because you got a 5 on your programming assignment.
Wait, is it 5 out of 5?
It's 45 points.
Yeah. What's, all right, quiz time. Pop quiz. No, not a pop quiz. What is the largest grade you can get on a programming assignment? 45. Right.
Oh.
What did you think?
I thought they were each 5 points or something on programming.
I don't know. Grade.
Exactly.
No.
It's like instead of going from 0 to, is that how you do the other classes? They say that you have 100 points total, and no.
If you never did a mud card, but you got perfect grades on all of your programming assignments, you can still get an A.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because what I was going to do was I was actually going to whack the points off your final grade.
Yeah, that would be bad.
But I decided that was a little too draconian, so I didn't do that. So, it's practically worthless because it's not even 25 points or 0.25, right? Because each one of your programming assignments is essentially one-fifth of your final grade. Right, so it's 20.25 divided by, or multiplied by 0.2. Right, so it's even. No. You got to turn it in personally, and you can't give it to your friend to turn in. And you need to use atoms and not bits. And there's probably something else. Oh yes, I'm going to reserve the right to start rejecting questions that I see. Well, first of all, questions that come from the review section of the book. No. That's not right. Questions that are duplicated somehow. It's like two people are independently 50 miles apart wrote exactly the same question. I don't think so. And so the first card I get counts. The other ones get thrown away. Yes?
You said you have to hand them in the first 15 minutes?
Yes.
So if you come to class 30 minutes late?
Exactly. You can keep it. Why? What did you think?
Well, you can come to class and write your question down and hand it to you.
And then you can leave if you want.
I'm not going to do that. But
that's why this sort of no attendance policy is kind of a little bit of a joke. It's like, ooh, wow. But that's normally the way I run my class. I don't care if you're here or not. It's up to you.
You're not here.
Because of the podcast and particularly the screencast, you really didn't need to attend. Like, for example, last semester I had a student who never showed up. right, because you can just watch the screencast. Just barely, yeah. Oh, there was no programming assignment last semester either. So it was just tests, which is why my intense hatred of tests. Yes.
If you happen to not be here for a pop quiz, is it just a zero? I guess, right?
The way pop quizzes work is they're optional. You get 5 points. You can spend it any way you want. Right. Up to 5 points.
Oh.
And so you can spend that any way you want. There's rules associated with it. And let's see. Oh, actually, let's check and see if this works. I actually forgot to check my links, as you probably could figure out. So where was the pop quiz stuff?
You may not give pop quiz.
I may not, because I have to find in the, here it is. Here's how pop quizzes work. So you click on that link, and that will tell you how pop quizzes go. And we can, in the second half of the, no, actually, I want to get out of here. But depending upon how much time we have, in the second half of the lecture, we can go look for a pop quiz if you want to see one. I think I do have one in operating systems. But, And this is the other thing that freaks people out. It can be arbitrary. One of my favorite pop quiz was, does anybody remember the, actually there were many of them. Does anybody remember when the Los Angeles airport lost their radar?
No.
Well, this was, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago. And there was a really interesting description, and I think it was the LA, the LA Times, but I don't think that was correct. But they sort of describe the problem, and if you look at the problem and think about it for at least 5 minutes, you can figure out how big the integers were in that program that crashed. So that was a pop quiz. Stuff like that. I'll see if we can find that one. Where are we? Okay, assistance, attendance. So that's it. Any questions about attendance? Any other questions about attendance? Cheating. This is actually, well, I might not say that. One of the nice things about submitting your homework assignments is I just get to wire it into all kinds of stuff that detects plagiarism and all that other nonsense. So, you know, it'll be sent off to Stanford and their plagiarism detection. So there's all this stuff that's around to look for people who are copying programs. But the first thing we need to figure out is what do I mean by cheating? And, you know, if you go to the Student Code of Conduct, it will tell you what it is. I read it once. I don't remember what it is. I will tell you what I think of as cheating. And it's actually kind of important because some of the things I'll recommend that you do in this class seem like cheating and perhaps are according to the Student Code of Conduct, but I don't think are. So what I think of as cheating is essentially submitting work under the pretense that you did it when in fact you did not. All right, so copying somebody else's assignment and handing it in as your own, copying an assignment off the web, which will be kind of hard to do. If you can do that. In fact, I was, what was I doing? Oh, I was looking at the Google code site. Anybody do Google code? Right, okay. Well, it turns out there's a copy of this assignment, well, an old copy of this assignment up there. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I couldn't figure out who it was who did it, but it's there, so if you want to look for it, maybe you can find it. I don't know that will be, in fact, I think it was it's so old it was a C++ version. But, and you really don't want to look at that, man, it'll burn your eyes. So there's something to think about when you're writing these programs at 3 o'clock in the morning in Java. It could be C++. Anyway, let's get back to the subject. So cheating. Cheating is essentially turning in somebody else's work as your own. That's it. That's what I consider cheating. That is essentially the only thing I think of as cheating. All right? And what happens when I think that occurs, so I get a particularly high score back from Stanford, for example, is I just give zeros to all the parties concerned. And that's it. I'm done. I've done my work. Now, the second part is now up to the people who are involved with the zeros, because now they have an opportunity to come to me and say, well, you know, I wasn't cheating. I actually did this work, and it's my own work, and I claim it as my own. And you're wrong to say that I'm cheating, because I did my own work. That turns out to be actually kind of a hard thing to do. Now, there is one really easy way to deal with this problem, particularly in this class where you're writing artifacts, okay, and that is to use some sort of version control system. How many people use a version control system? Which one?
No.
Okay, so use Git. Anybody else? Everybody should be raising their hand. Everybody should be using some version control system, whether it's Git or CVS or Mercurial or RCS or Subversion. Everybody should be doing this. How do you expect to get jobs? Good jobs, anyway, if you don't know a version control system. Would you actually work for a company that doesn't have a version control system? The answer is no, you will not, because that is it. Incompetent company. So the first thing you should do is you should learn a version control system, and they're not that hard. I mean, Git is incredibly painful, but RCS is pretty trivial. It's pretty simple. And the reason that, well, it'll help you for two reasons. First of all, it'll protect you against the RM star monster, okay? And it will also give a trace of your work. And the reason I mention this is I speak from experience. When I was in graduate school, I took an operating systems course, and I handed my assignment in, and I got a zero. Right? So I went to the professor and said, what's the deal? Why did I get a zero? And he says, oh, you cheated. Right? And then he showed me this other person's program, which is essentially a copy of mine. Right? So now I'm in trouble. And this was at Georgia Tech, and those people are extremely tight asses about cheating. Right, this is one of the reasons I have a really loose attitude towards cheating, because I went through the opposite, and it was a real pain in the neck. But I was using, at the time, RCS, so I was able to show the professor like 14 versions of my code, starting from, you know, main. Okay, and that was enough to get me off. All right, so that's the easiest way to get out of this problem, is to show, in fact, that you have been doing steady development. Right. The mysterious thing is the assignment is due on Monday, and you see in the, there's one submission to the source code control system, and it was like on Sunday night. And that's it. Boom. My program like sprung full blown from my forehead like Athena from Zeus. It was Athena from Zeus, right? It was sprung from the forehead of Zeus. Right. That's really suspicious, particularly if you're talking about a 2,000-line program. So if you use a version, so again, I recommend you run right out and learn. You can learn GitHub. I really don't like GitHub or Git. I like Mercurial. I think there's a really nice version control system, but most people use Git. So you can, but you should use something. Use something. Okay, so that's the end of that little sermon. Where were we? Okay, so that's what I consider cheating to be, and that's how I deal with it. I just give zeros. All right, any questions about that? I mean, it's actually kind of important because it does come up. All right. Oh, the other thing I should say. So that's what I consider cheating. The things that I do not consider cheating, I don't think it is cheating for people. I actually haven't made up my mind about this. I suspect that it will be the case, but I'm not committing myself at this point, and it's being recorded. You'll be able to work in groups of two. Right? But again, I'm not committing myself to this. Right. So the other thing I recommend is that groups help each other out. You know, groups look at each other's code. I mean, one of the best ways to learn how to write code is to read somebody else's code. And in fact, I had some students, one time I taught this class, I had some students that actually did that. They got together as two groups, and then they just sort of exchanged code, and, you know, they did code reviews of each other's code. That is perfectly okay. That is not cheating. I don't think, my definition is that it's not cheating, regardless of what anybody else thinks, and I'm the only one that you really have to pay attention to in this case. Right, and that's, I recommend that you do that, because you bring fresh eyes to your code. Again, you are going to be writing significant programs. These are non-trivial programs, even though it's going to be a trivial operating system. Alright, and the more help that you can get, the better off you'll be. So I do recommend that people get together and work in groups. You know, design in groups, too, because you're going to have to be doing design for this. Because I'm going to give you a bunch of interfaces and say, go to work. Right, and everything else is up to you. Now, the question, yes?
Can you give us an idea of what kind of program?
An operating system. You can look at previous versions of my class and get an idea of how it's going to go. The problem there is I used to teach this class in 4 sections, I think, of like 1 month apiece. That doesn't sound right. But I used to have bigger sections, and you would only have 4 programming assignments. But now you have 6. So I split them up into smaller pieces, which is actually the problem I'm having. I can't figure out a good way to carve them up, but I'll figure that out soon. But if you want to look at previous, last semester, like I said, I didn't do this, but I believe all my previous classes, I have examples. And I also have my code up there. I'll put my code up, too, my solution to the problem. Okay, unfortunately, and plus we'll be working on it in class, too, is the other thing. Unfortunately, I believe what I'm going to do, because like this will be the, I don't know, 7th or 8th time I've taught this class, I'm probably going to write the programming assignment in Clojure, which is a JVM-based language. It is not Java-based, but it runs on the JVM, which, is, of course, is kind of a Lisp. So you'll be looking at Lisp code trying to figure out what the hell's going on. But you'll get some idea. And that's the other thing we can talk about later. Does anybody use a JVM language regularly? Like, I don't know, Groovy, Jython, JRuby, Clojure? Nothing?
I don't use it.
Sorry?
I've seen Groovy a lot, but I've never used it.
Okay. Well, if anybody would like to do, like I said, you need to be comfortable. And if anybody would prefer using some of these other languages, you should probably talk to me pretty quickly, because we have to figure out, I have no problem accommodating that, but we need to work on it. Or Clojure. Well, actually not Clojure. I claim Clojure. Sorry. Oh, okay. So that's the other thing. Now, the question is, well, what about cheating, right? But that's not really a problem, right? Because essentially, what you have to, I mean, if you pass around pieces of paper, what's going to happen? You just make sure you get your pieces of paper back. Right. People can write things down, people can write ideas down, which is exactly the point, because then it gets stuck in your head and you remember things and you've learned something anyway, right? But you're not going to reproduce it exactly, is the point. So if you sort of read somebody else's code, it goes into your head and then you write it like next day or later on the same day, it's going to be different from what you saw. Unless it's something extremely trivial, but who cares about trivial things? So I do recommend that people work together, groups work together. But again, you got to be careful. You don't want to give access to your code to other people. Like, for example, I don't anticipate seeing the assignments on GitHub. Okay? That would be bad. Or, for that matter, Google Code. Oh, in my case, I used to live in an environment where everything was wide open, right? So all my protections were essentially 777, which meant that anybody could see anything. And that was a really nice environment. I learned so much looking at other people's code, just going through, looking at their dot profiles, all this other stuff. And I took that with me because I used to work, and then I went to graduate school. And I took that with me, and of course, it was like, oh, free food. So people started taking all my assignments, and that's how I got in trouble. So I had to stop doing that, which was a major disappointment. But anyway, okay. So that's it for cheating. Any questions about that? Wow, that went on for a while. No questions? Okay, let's go on. Complaining about grades, I recognize and encourage a student's sacred right to whine about their grades. This actually turns out to be an important skill, because as you go through life, people will look at you and say, boy, you're stupid. And you have to do one of two things. You have to either ignore it, which is a lot of times is a useful thing to do, because if this person who's saying you're stupid is an idiot, then you don't care, because who cares what an idiot thinks? On the other hand, if this person is your boss, even if that boss may be an idiot, then you have a problem. You have to deal with it. And you have to argue against that assumption, that claim, that statement. Right? And you need to be good at that, because otherwise you'll just get dumped. So this is, in a sense, one way to do that. I'm giving you the opportunity to practice that. Now, this is actually less useful because I don't have any tests. Because usually what would happen is I would just, you know, someone would give me a ridiculous answer and I'd say, no, zero. And then they would come back and say, well, no, this is a good answer. Okay? And then we'd go back and forth about whether or not it's a good answer. And occasionally I would actually change the grade because they would have a point. On the other hand, you're dealing with programs, right? Your operating system either runs to completion or it crashes. There isn't much argument there. Okay? But, like I said, there's like 5 or 10 points with respect to style. And maybe you can put an argument in there. I don't know. Although, usually what I do for the people who are going to be writing Java is I run your code through Finebugs. Anybody familiar with Finebugs? Okay, well, that's sort of like a static analyzer, but it does some other things, too. And I have special rules that are useful, and it will pretty much tell you what this extra 5 or 10 floating points is. You pretty much have to come up clean in order to get those extra points. And again, there's no argument there, right? Either it's clean or it's not. So from this point of view, there's not much argument in this class. But there is one important point, which I will talk about now. And this comes back to the issue of your number. The first point is, the only complaint that I care about is that I did something wrong with respect to your grades. Okay? That is the only thing I care about. I care about nothing else. I don't care if you graduate. That is not my problem. That is your problem. Okay, so any argument that starts, I need a tenth of a point in order to graduate, I don't care. So what? That's not an argument that I'm going to listen to. I don't care about your fellowships. I don't care about your GPA. I don't care about any of that stuff. I don't care about your visa status, if that's an important issue. None of that stuff I care about. The only thing I care about is I made a mistake, and you're going to show me that I did. That's it. That's the only argument I'm going to listen to. Okay? So when you come to me to complain about whatever it is you're complaining about, make sure you present an argument related to what I did versus what you think I should have done. That's it. That's the only argument I'm going to pay attention to. The other issue is actually kind of important, again, to the extent that there are going to be arguments. You have a particular period of time over which you can make a complaint. And that period of time is essentially the period that begins when your assignment is turned in and runs to the time when your next assignment is turned in. So you have essentially the next assignment period to argue about your previous assignment. Sorry? I grade by machine. Right?
Yeah, no. Like, your grade could be like the second day, a day before the next assignment's due?
No.
That's right.
It should be within 2 or 3 days, certainly. That would be long. Yes?
What do you mean you grade by machine?
Programs. I run tests. Actually, you sort of do the grading, right? Because I will give you disks that you're supposed to run that contain programs, right? And you can sit there and say, oops, that crashed, or yay, it ran.
So if everything runs the way you tell us it should run when you submit it,
yep.
We get an F.
Yep.
More or less.
Well, more or less. There's that style stuff, but yeah.
Cool.
Now, I also reserve the right, actually, let me not say that. We'll talk more about the programming assignment in the second section when it actually comes out. So you do have this finite period with which to argue. Again, this is not a real big deal because I don't anticipate there being a lot of arguments over the programs, the results of the programming assignments. Okay, but there is an important point. Why do I do that? Why do I have this rule? And it's related to something I said earlier.
Aren't the program before relies on the next one?
Yes, that's true. That's true. But that's sort of, that, I mean, that's brutal, right? Either it runs or it doesn't. This is a more general reason. Because remember, this is, like I said, this is boilerplate. I say this in every class. So why is this here? And now you can remember your number. What were you trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So if you are a undergraduate, you need to get at least a C in this class, which I forget is maybe a 5. You have to get more than a 5. Right? So what happens if you have a 5 at the end of the semester? You get a C minus. So what are you going to do if you're looking at a C minus, which is not passing? I assume. I mean, I get confused about what's passing these days. I'm assuming that C minus is not, let's pretend that C minus is not passing. What are you going to do? It's the end of the semester, you're looking at the C minus. What are you going to do? What did you do?
I didn't do it yet.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to talk to the professor.
Exactly, you're going to go back and you're going to look at your previous assignments and you're going to try and squeeze out that tenth of a point. Okay? That, you're not going to be able to do that. The only way you can do that is by looking at your last programming assignment. You can't go back to the first one and say, oh, look, I deserve more points. Because you only have up until the end of the next programming assignment to argue about the previous one. After that, you have no arguments whatsoever. I mean, I don't even listen to what you're going to say. It's like, nope, we're done. Okay? Which brings up the question, what about the last programming assignment? The last programming assignment period ends at final exam time. So you have from the time that you submit your final programming assignment, and my assumption is, because hardly anyone ever does, no one's going to do the last programming assignment. So I guess we don't have to talk about it, but should you actually do the last programming assignment, I had a couple of beasts in this class who did all the programming assignments, that you have up until the final exam period, the start of the final exam period, to argue your final grade, final programming assignment grade. Okay? So that's the rules there. Questions about that? Like I said, this is not a real big deal. Well, I mean, it's a big deal because, again, it's an important skill that you need to have. I used to work with somebody who just loved to hammer me, and I just ignored her until I figured out that my boss was also paying attention to her, so I had to start fighting back. And so it's a skill that you should develop. Unfortunately, but true. I mean, the best way to do it is just to be, completely universally agreeably brilliant, but unfortunately that's not me, so you have to go and approach it in other ways. All right, late assignments. Don't do it. Hand your assignments in on time. You get docked 10 points for a late assignment, and the clock goes from midnight to midnight. So as you tick over from one day to the next, you lose 10 points. Now, to show you what kind of a jerk I am, when do you suspect the time the programming assignments are due? When's the deadline? Exactly. Well, not that bad. Not that much of a jerk. 11:50. Right? Which means that if you miss the deadline, you have 10 minutes. First of all, you get whacked 10 points. Okay? And these are like unscaled points. This is not scaled 0 to 45. These are 10 points. And then, of course, if you don't do it within 10 minutes, you lose another 10 points. What I'm trying to do is encourage you to submit by the deadline. So the answer, I mean, because submitting a late program is a valid way to game the system. I used to do this. You know, I used to sit there and say, you know, if I just finish this thing, this is back when I was stupid. I sit there and say, if I could just finish this, I'd get 100, right? I just have to do this little thing, make this little change, and then everything will be perfect, and I can submit it, and I'll be late. That's true, I'll lose 5 points or whatever, but I'll get 100. So I'll be losing 5 points off 100, as opposed to handing something in that would get an 85. And of course, that never works, because you just break your program, and you're sitting there going, ah. So first of all, you should never do that, because it never works. But I don't want to encourage that behavior. So you're just going to get completely whacked. You are never going to recover from submitting a program late. There is no possible justification for submitting a program late. Do not do it. The only reason I do this is because if I tell people they can't submit it late, then we get into huge arguments about it. So I just say, fine, submit it late, and here's how much flesh I'm going to take from your body. And that's it. Any questions? About anything? Okay, here's a bunch of links that you can look at. A bunch of stuff. We'll talk about that later. Oh, and here's the previous time I taught the course, but like I said, this is not very interesting. Oh, well, let's go back. Oh, this is the principal reason for... I don't like this class. I tried to get them to kill this class for like 5 years, and they wouldn't do it. And of course, it's obvious why they wouldn't do it. But I thought this class was useless. Even though I dearly love operating systems, and I used to do this for a living, I never really understood the point as a required course. I could see it certainly as an optional course or a concentration course. But this is actually the reason why people have to learn operating systems, because it's a backdoor into learning concurrency. And we will, in fact, spend a whole section on concurrency. Is a lot of fun. I used to teach a course in concurrent programming, but it is beastly hard to do. So, but let's go down to the bottom. And let's go back one more time. Let's go down. Let's see. Four program. Okay, so here's a class. This is the spring of 2012. So let's go to the schedule. And remember, this is 3 years ago now. That's strange. I don't remember that. Oh, so here's a pop quiz. Let's take a look at that. I don't know which one this is. Oh, yeah, so this is a stupid thing I read. Where did I read this? Linux Journal. Right, so this is something that I read, and I said, boy, this is stupid, so let's turn it into a pop quiz, and I did. So you come into class, I ask you to take out a piece of paper, write your name on it, I show you this, I give you 5 minutes to give me the answer. At the end of 5 minutes, you pass your papers up, and then we go into the answer. So let's just pretend. What's the answer here? Anybody know? Yes?
Is it because it says 256 kilobytes or 256 megabytes?
Yep. Actually, let's check. Yes, that's right. So that's the problem. I mean, stupid little things like this. You should be able to catch that. I mean, I caught that. I was reading it, and it caught my eye. So it's like, that's the kind of thing. All right. But that's not the airplane one. That's my favorite. Let's go on. Are we looking for an assignment? Okay, here's an example assignment. Now, remember, this is from 2 or 3 years ago. So... I taught it in four sections, process management, device management, memory management, and file systems. So you would write a process management subsystem. You would write four subsystems in your operating system. That's going to be split into six pieces, which is what I'm doing now. But here's an example of the problem. And essentially, in this case, what did you do? So here are the disks that I give you. Right? I said I give you disks. There they are. You run them, all the good stuff. And essentially what you do is you implement system calls. So you have to implement the exit system call, all the, and we'll talk about this, of course. So that's what the programming assignment will look like, more or less. And I usually also have my answers here, but apparently I don't. Oh, another pop quiz. Let's see what this one is. Boy, that was hot that semester. Oh, this was a good one. This was a good one. This one you have to know. This is operating systems based. So I'm not going to go into it. But I had a student. This is actually from FindBugs. This is someone submitted code that showed this up. And the question is, what is FindBugs complaining about? What's the problem here? This was actually an important point, because this person was, and this is an example of why this is a hard assignment. His code was failing in really mysterious ways, but FindBugs was in fact pointing him to the problem. It's like, this is the problem right here. But of course, it's doing it with static analysis, so it's just saying, oh, you shouldn't write programs like this in general, because it's bad. And this person actually it was two people. This person fell into this hole and could not really figure out how to get out, even though FindBugs was telling it in an indirect way what the problem was. So this actually is a good example too. And I thought this was really nice. Once I understood what was going on, it took me a while to figure out what was going on too. But the point was, he objected to the, what was the answer? Let's go back to the answer. I don't remember exactly what his objection was. So the problem is there's only one copy of a static field, and it's associated with the class, right? That makes sense. Class instance reference to a static field refers to the class. So those are all referring to the same thing. Okay. Yeah, that was it. That was the problem. So he was anticipating a copy per instance, and he was, in fact, getting just one copy for all instances. So as you might expect, if your assumption is this is private, when in fact it's public, you can really screw up bad. And this is what I mean about knowing what you're doing. This is Java stuff. You should know this walking out of 175, 176. Do they teach this? I don't know. Maybe they don't.
Not really.
But let me see. Huh, I wonder, that's surprising, because I usually put my, this is strange. Well, if you go even further back, you will see I have copies of my answers. So I'll show you what, you can see the way that I implemented it. All right, that's it. Any other questions?